This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. President Joe Biden is framing November's midterm elections as part of a battle for America's soul, warning of threats from Donald Trump and his backers. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
In a primetime address from Philadelphia's Independence Hall,
sacred ground in America,
the president put it in stark terms.
Equality and democracy are under assault,
saying Republicans who support his predecessor's Make America Great Again philosophy are trying to take the nation backwards, and it won't happen on his watch.
That is the work of my presidency.
And while the president urged Americans of all ideologies to work with him, top House Republican Kevin McCarthy said earlier, if anybody's attacked the country's foundations, it's the president.
His policies have severely wounded America's soul.
Other Republicans accused him of dividing the nation by going after political opponents. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A team of UN experts has visited Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear plant, now in the hands of Russia. AP Washington correspondent Charles de Ledesma has that story.
Russian and Ukrainian news agencies say IAEA chief Rafael Grossi left the plant after a few hours of work there. Grossi telling reporters his team had collected important information and would continue its analysis. The key thing that I wanted to see, I saw, he said, adding that the group would stay nearby to speak further with residents. Grossi added, for me, the work begins now. We conducted an initial assessment. We see the dedicated work of the station's staff and management. Despite, he says, a difficult situation and circumstances, they're very professional in their work. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And this is VOA News. The Biden administration called on China to immediately cease atrocities against Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities following a long-delayed report by the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, concluding that the treatment of minorities in China's Xinjiang province may constitute crimes against humanity. Beijing, which for months had sought to delay the UN report, denounced it on Thursday in a video statement. China's ambassador to the UN called the report a fabricated lie. A Washington AP correspondent, Ben Thomas, reports a federal judge has appeared to give a boost to former President Trump's hope for appointing an outside legal expert to review government records by the FBI. We get more on that story right now.
U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon did not immediately issue a ruling, but appeared to give a boost to Trump's hopes for appointing a special master. His lawyers argue it's necessary to allow highly personal information to be separated out, along with anything else protected by attorney-client or executive privilege. The Justice Department counters it's already identified materials that could contain such information. The presidential documents do not belong to Trump now that he's left office, and the appointment of a special master could delay the investigation. The judge questioned those arguments, asking, ultimately, what's the harm? I'm Ben Thomas.
U.S. health advisors are endorsing new COVID-19 boosters that target today's most common Omicron strands. The tweak shots made by Pfizer and rival Moderna contain half the regular vaccine and half protection against the BA4 and BA5 Omicron versions. It's not clear just how much more protection the extra shot will bring because the exact recipe hasn't finished human testing. But advisors to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention concluded Thursday it's the best option ahead of an unexpected winter surge. The CDC must agree before shots begin. And officials in the U.S. state of Mississippi set up an emergency distribution center for handouts of water and hand sanitizers Thursday in the capital city of Jackson as efforts to restore a flood-impaired, long-troubled water system continued. Jackson residents were already under a boiled water odor before flooding from the Pearl River exacerbated long-standing problems at one of the city's two water treatment plants. Officials say they made progress overnight, refilling tanks, treating water, and increasing pressure at one of the plants. For more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Today is Friday, September 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. President Joe Biden sounds the alarm about what he views as extremist threats to the nation's democracy by, quote, MAGA Republicans.
Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
A team of UN experts arrive in Ukraine's atomic plant complex to assess the risk of radiation as fighting rages nearby.
The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, said that representatives of the organization will remain at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant.
Anti-Tigrayan rebels say Ethiopian government forces and troops from Eritrea have launched a coordinated offensive. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. President Joe Biden warned Thursday night that, quote, equality and democracy are under assault, unquote, in the U.S. This as he sounded an alarm about his predecessor Donald Trump and, quote, MAGA Republicans, unquote, adherents, labeling them an extremist threat to the nation and its future. Aiming to reframe the November elections as part of a battle for the nation's soul, Biden used his prime-time speech at Independence Hall in Philadelphia to argue that Trump and Make America Great Again allies are a challenge to the nation's system of government, its standing abroad, and its citizens' way of life.
Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic. Now, I want to be very clear. Not every Republican, not even the majority of Republicans, are MAGA Republicans. Not every Republican embraces their extreme ideology. I know, because I've been able to work with these mainstream Republicans. But there's no question that the Republican Party today is dominated, driven, and intimidated by Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans. And that is a threat to this country.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. A team of UN experts arrived at Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia atomic plant complex on Thursday to assess the risk of radiation disaster after being delayed several hours by shelling near the site. Rafael Grossi, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, is leading the mission, said there had been, quote, increased military activity, including this morning, until very recently, unquote, ahead of the inspection. Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller speaks with Anna Chanikova in Kyiv for more updates.
The mission finally made it to the site. What we know for the moment, and this is the most detail that we have, so the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, said that representatives of the organization will remain at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant.
We are finishing our long-awaited visit to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. I have just completed a first tour of the key areas that we wanted to see in this first approach to the whole facility. Of course, there is a lot more to do. My team is staying on. And more importantly, and most importantly, we are establishing a continued presence from the IAEA here.
Again, Ukrainian representatives were not present.
And we've also learned that the team at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant is expected to stay until around September 3rd. What else can you tell us about the delay in the mission actually arriving at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant because of that continued fighting?
Their trip to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant was very difficult and very dangerous. From the very morning, we were getting reports from the Ukrainian intelligence that actually the city of Enerhoatom itself was under heavy shelling, and the Zaporizhzhia region in general as well. And the shelling of the city of Enerhodar was since 5 o'clock in the morning today, local time. And we hear it from the intelligence and from the officials, from the mayor of the city of Enerhodar and from the head of the Zaporizhzhia military administration, Mr. Staruch. Also, we know that due to this shelling, the mission was stopped at one of the checkpoints on the Ukrainian-controlled territory. they had to wait until it was more or less safe, or at least safer, to continue their trip. We know that this happened something like 20 kilometers from the front line, so they were still at the Ukrainian controlled territory. The most important is, I guess, coming, because of course everyone is waiting for Rafael Grossi to actually come to either Kyiv or Zaporizhia, and everyone is waiting for his further comments and maybe giving us more details, because for the moment we don't have neither information about the state of the plant, the state of the reactors, nor about the future plans. This is probably something the most expected for the moment.
That's reporter Anna Chanikova speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine Steve Miller. An assessment by U.S. defense chiefs and intelligence officials concluded that Russia is replenishing its depleted forces in Ukraine with thousands of mercenaries from the Wagner Group and prisoners as Ukraine continues its offensive to recapture seized territories. In downgraded intelligence findings, Washington said Russian forces are beset by morale, logistics and supply problems, which have bogged down their operations on several fronts as the war grinds on. For more, I spoke with VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden.
Russian forces took a bigger hit, according to Western assessments, than Russia was anticipating. And building those forces back up has been problematic. Just recently, Russian President Vladimir Putin signed an order to increase the size of the Russian military to 1.5 million soldiers. And the U.S. perspective, shared by a senior defense official just recently, is that the effort's unlikely to succeed, because not only has Russia been having trouble of late, but historically, Russia's not been able to meet its personnel and strength targets. That, according to a senior U.S. defense official, and in this specific target that they're talking about is one that would grow the Russian military by about 137,000 troops. The latest U.S. assessment also warns that Russia likely began its war against Ukraine back in February with about 150,000 soldiers short of what its targets were, and that of the force it did have, about a quarter of those troops were conscripts and maybe did not have the level of training or the experience needed for the type of operation Russia ultimately ran in terms of the invasion of Ukraine.
Analysts are somewhat surprised that the administration will release such a sensitive information about Russia's troop strength or lack thereof. Why do you think they did that?
The U.S., though, consistently going back to before the invasion began in February, has been coming out and sharing intelligence designed to undermine Russia's credibility, expose Russia's plans, and expose its weaknesses. And one of the concerns has been whether or not Ukraine, over time, would be able to stand up to the force the size that Russia had. And Russia had one of the larger militaries, one of the better equipped militaries, according to conventional thinking. And despite those advantages, and still having the advantage of air power that Ukraine does not have, Russia has not been able to assert that type of dominance in its war with Ukraine. And the U.S. and other Western countries have frequently been calling Russia out on these weaknesses, citing the morale problems, citing the problems with coordinating joint action, coordinating troops on the ground with their hybrid activities, with their air activity, and having it coordinated in a way that was going to pack the biggest punch against Ukraine. Those things have not happened in the way many Western military analysts and intelligence officials expected, and the West, including the U.S., has consistently been quick to call Russia out on that for a couple of reasons. First of all, it helps galvanize their views. It also gives more confidence to Ukraine, which the Ukrainian troops on the front lines, because it gives them some hope. It gives them, according to this view, the hope that they can not only compete with, but outlast and potentially even push back Russian forces. And according to the U.S. and other Western countries, you're already beginning to see some of that during Ukraine's southern counteroffensive, where some Russian units have been observed falling back as Ukrainian forces and battalions move forward.
That's VOA National Security Correspondent Joe Selden speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Belarus has become an accomplice to Russia's military aggression against Ukraine. Russian troops used it as a launchpad for missile strikes and air raids in Ukraine. In response, Western countries have imposed tough sanctions on Belarus. Maxim Morkakov has the story.
During the Russian war in Ukraine, Belarus has been acting as a de facto Russian ally. The landlocked country has been run by President Alexander Lukashenko since 1994 and has maintained close ties to Moscow. From its shared border with Ukraine, Belarus has allowed Russian troops to use its territory as a staging ground, and Russian missiles have been fired into Ukraine from Belarusian territory. In response, Western nations have imposed harsh sanctions against Belarus that have affected all sectors of the economy. President Lukashenko has defended Russia's invasion but has not committed troops to the fight. Belarus launched a harsh crackdown against peaceful anti-government protesters in August of 2020, with 1,300 political prisoners' demonstrations largely quieted. But when Russia launched its invasion of Ukraine this year, people again took to the streets, and opposition groups are actively working to help Ukrainians. And there are at least two Belarusian military regiments that have crossed the border and are fighting on the Ukrainian side. But Western and Ukrainian attitudes toward Belarus are increasingly negative. And experts say things aren't likely to change there if Russian President Vladimir Putin remains in power. For now, Belarus continues to hold military drills on the Ukrainian border and recently announced that Belarusian planes are now capable of carrying Russian nuclear weapons. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Washington.
Tigrayan rebels in Ethiopia say government forces and troops from neighboring Eritrea have launched a coordinated offensive as fighting intensifies in the region. Harry Wilkins reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
On Thursday, a spokesperson for the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front said on Twitter that Eritrean forces have joined Ethiopian federal forces in the fight against the TPLF. Getachew Reda said the forces launched what he called a massive four-pronged offensive early Thursday in the Adyabo area of northwestern Tigray, adding that TPLF forces are defending their positions. A later statement by the Tigray military command said planes belonging to Ethiopian Airlines are being used to transport military personnel and supply munitions to troops in the north. There has been no independent confirmation of the TPLF accusations. An Ethiopian government spokesperson and the Eritrean Ministry of Information did not respond to a request for comment. In their own statements, Ethiopian officials have accused the TPLF of launching attacks in Amhara this week. Bloomberg News reports that Ethiopia's foreign minister told diplomats Thursday that the government is taking measures against Tigrayan forces while trying to avoid civilian casualties. William Davison is an analyst with the International Crisis Group, a research institution based in Belgium.
Now, Tigrayan reports, which seem to be accurate, of a large-scale incursion into Tigray from the north by Eritrean and federal forces. So it is evident that the conflict is now seriously escalating. There are also reports of confrontations and a heavy federal military build-up around Waghimra in northern Amhara, a little bit to the west of southern Tigray, where the fighting started. So another indication that the fighting is widespread and possibly of a major new front.
Eritrea is a long-time opponent of the TPLF, which effectively ruled Ethiopia from 1991 to 2018. Fighting between Tigrayan fighters and pro-Ethiopian government forces resumed in northern Ethiopia a week ago, ending a five-month ceasefire. As a result, the UN has stopped humanitarian aid deliveries to Tigray, where relief groups say parts of the region are likely in a state of famine. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
In other news, UN spokesperson said on Thursday that the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres hopes China will, quote, take on board the recommendations, unquote, made in a report by the organization's human rights office in Xinjiang province. China's, quote, arbitrarily and discriminatory detention, unquote, of Uyghurs and other Muslims in the Xinjiang region may constitute crimes against humanity, the outgoing UN human rights chief said in a long-awaited report on Wednesday. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet, who has faced criticism from some diplomats and rights groups for being too soft on China, released the report just minutes before her four-year term ended. She visited China in May. China had vigorously denied any abuses in Xinjiang and issued a 131-page response to the 48-page UN report. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Campaigners are urging Australia to allow in more migrants and refugees to help address chronic labour shortages. The recently elected Labour government is hosting a two-day jobs and skills summit starting Thursday. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australian industries from hospitality to retail say there are not enough workers to fill job openings. In Canberra, the government convened a two-day meeting of business, union and community representatives. Campaigners have argued that Australia should increase its annual refugee acceptance from its current level of around 14,000 to help ease a chronic labour shortage. The Refugee Council of Australia, an advocacy organisation, has said refugees show greater propensity to form their own business than other migrants and have high levels of entrepreneurialism. However, the council has noted such barriers to employment as lacking English language skills and Australian employers' hesitancy to recognise qualifications and credentials earned overseas by refugees. The government has previously indicated that in time it would double Australia's acceptance of refugees. Those at the summit expressed agreement that migration numbers must be increased to help meet a chronic lack of workers in Australia. The exact number is yet to be determined, but reports have suggested the annual migrant level could be increased from 160,000 to 200,000 places a year. Immigration Minister Andrew Giles told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that tough restrictions of migrants imposed during the COVID-19 pandemic will deter some migrants.
We are in a global contest for talent, and highly skilled migrants will be looking around. And one of the things they'll be looking at is what happened during the pandemic. And they will have seen the former government tell people to go home, and for those who didn't return to their original home, denied them the sort of income support and other supports that other countries did. We've got to recognise that, and we've got to communicate that we won't be doing something similar in the future.
Reports Thursday said that delays in processing visas have left about a million prospective workers unable to travel to Australia. Ironically, this occurred because of a shortage of immigration and other administrative staff. Australia's official unemployment rate is 3.4%, just below that of the United States and the United Kingdom. New Zealand is making temporary changes to its immigration rules to fill gaps in its labour market. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
A UN monitoring committee is urging Benin and Zimbabwe to address alleged discrimination against minority and marginalised groups in their countries. The committee released findings this week on progress in seven countries whose records were under review. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination expressed regret that Benin's National Plan of Action Against Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia, and Intolerance has been only partially implemented since it was adopted in 2014. While discrimination and hate speech remain prevalent, mainly against albinos, the committee said few people have formally complained about the crimes. Committee member Pansy Tlakula surmised it might be due to lack of awareness of available judicial remedies, lack of confidence in the justice system, or fear of reprisals on the part of victims. She said people with albinism are most victimized by the discrimination that pervades the society.
In our interactive dialogue with Benin, the committee raised concerns about reports that people with albinism are often subjected to extreme physical attacks, stigmatization, and discrimination based on beliefs related to witchcraft and skin color.
The committee urged Benin to take effective measures to protect people with albinism from such vicious behavior and to ensure they have equal access to education, health, and employment. Regarding Zimbabwe, the committee said it was pleased with the positive measures taken by the government to implement the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. However, Tlakula said the committee was disturbed by reports that atrocities committed during the Gukurahundi violence of the 1980s continue to be a source of ethnic tension. Around 20,000 Ndebele-speaking people were killed in Matabele land and Midlands provinces by government forces in the 1980s. Tlakula said many victims remain traumatized. She said the committee is concerned that they are barred by state agents from participating in mourning and commemorative activities.
It urged Zimbabwe to take measures to ensure that mourning and commemorative activities can be conducted without restrictions or threats. It also called on the state party to ensure that the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission fulfills its responsibilities to provide a platform for post-conflict public truth-telling.
The committee also criticized the widespread discrimination against people who work in the informal sector or as domestic laborers, noting most are Black women who face low wages and work in dehumanizing conditions. The UN experts requested Zimbabwe amend its labor laws to end discrimination on the grounds of race, class, and gender. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Nearly 20 million people living in the Horn of Africa are facing a crisis of food insecurity. The region has suffered four consecutive droughts and is looking at a fifth come October. The Horn region has two rainy seasons per year, said USAID Administrator Samantha Power, who recently visited some of the most seriously affected regions in Somalia and Kenya. This is the first time in history, she stressed at a recent talk here in Washington, that the Horn of Africa has suffered four consecutive failed rainy seasons.
Today, pasture lands are turning to dust, and in near biblical scenes, weakened farm animals are dying of disease. To date, at least 7 million livestock have already died in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. There just isn't enough water to quench their thirst or enough grass to feed them.
Through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, the government of the United States is providing critical humanitarian assistance, totaling $1.2 billion to the three most severely affected countries in the region, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. Early humanitarian investments are critical to saving lives. In Ethiopia this year alone, the United States is providing $668 million in support of more than 8.1 million people whose survival is threatened by the historic drought. In Kenya, the drought has pushed more than 4 million people to the edge of starvation, with communities in the arid and semi-arid land countries having been hit the hardest. By the end of May, some 70% of crops were reported lost, along with at least 2.4 million head of livestock. USAID is providing to the people of Kenya nearly $255 million in emergency food and other critical humanitarian and development assistance. And in Somalia, 7.1 million people are affected by this crisis. More than 3 million agricultural animals have died, and 1.4 million children are facing acute malnutrition through the end of the year. USAID is providing $476 million in critical humanitarian and development aid to the people of Somalia, bringing the U.S. total assistance for this year to more than $707 million. This humanitarian aid illustrates the United States' continuing commitment to the welfare of the people of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. We urge other partner governments, said Administrator Power, to join us in significantly increasing their own commitments to prevent widespread famine and millions of deaths.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.